welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, our classical arts contributor, Charles Greenfield, gives us his summer CD review. Chef Norman Van Aken cooks up a word on food, and our arts calendar features Bill Nix, vice president of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Our first guest today won the prestigious James Beard Foundation's Award for Best Chef Southeast Region in 1994. He was lauded by Food and Wine magazine as, quote, one of the best 10 chefs in America, unquote. The New York Times crowned him, quote, the Ponce de Leon of New Florida Cooking, unquote. Currently, he is the spokesman for the National Mango Board and featured in the new documentary Viva Mango, which airs on WLRN-TV Channel 17 tomorrow at 2 and 10:30 p.m. He is the author of New World Cuisine and Cookery from Doubleday, 1995, The Great Citrus Book, 10 Speed Press, 1997, and The Great Mango Book, 10 Speed Press, 2001. He holds an honorary doctorate of culinary arts from Johnson & Wales University and received the President's Award for Community Service from his alma mater, Florida International University. Recognized as Chef of the Year by Share Our Strength, the nonprofit later awarded him nationally as Humanitarian of the Year. Currently, he is active on the board of Feeding South Florida, and today he joins us on behalf of next Tuesday's event, Taste of the Nation South Florida, a fundraiser for Share Our Strength, the nation's premier culinary nonprofit dedicated to making sure no kid grows up hungry. Each year, the country's greatest chefs and mixologists donate their time and talents at nearly 40 fundraising events throughout the nation and Canada to raise the critical funds needed to support Share Our Strength's No Kid Hungry campaign to end childhood hunger. And we welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat, Mr. Alan Susser.
Wow. A pleasure.
Did you do all that?
I think so, and loved every moment and every taste of that.
You look like you're only 29. How can you do all that in just a few days? Alan, tell me about childhood hunger. It's quite a severe crisis throughout the country. I understand that one in five children still struggles with hunger, and that's too widespread.
No, it's completely too out of hand, and it's gotten out of hand even more since this current recession. Kids are not getting food properly. They're not getting proper nutrition. The problem is if they don't get proper nutrition and they don't have food available to them, they don't grow up properly.
Sure.
They get hungry, and so that when they're in school, if they get to school, because their main concern is survival, and so they're thinking about food, they're not thinking about the math and science and the English. They get sick more often, so they become more of a burden on the whole of the community if they're not being fed properly, not getting proper nutrition, bones, vitamins, nutrients, the whole thing. So we're stepping on our future by not helping to feed kids, and that's really why it's so important to help No Kid Hungry, to make sure that no kid goes hungry. And to have one in five is awful. Here in South Florida, 495,000 kids went to sleep hungry last night. So it's not just one neighborhood. It's not just one sect or one. It's throughout. It's pervasive. It's your neighbor. One in five is your neighborhood, is people down the block. And their kids are suffering, which makes the families – means also the families obviously suffer. But you can't fault the kid for where they're born. So we need to help them all. We need to help them to preserve our future, to give them the greatest potential to be a part of the community, to grow and be a producing creative component in our community. And that's really why No Kid Hungry is so important to me.
I'm if I can deviate for just a second, I'm upset at the quality of food. I guess this is a question about food distribution in various neighborhoods. I go to a food store in one neighborhood, and there's nothing but processed food available at sometimes high prices. And people who are forced to walk to that facility and purchase from there aren't getting healthy raw food, perhaps grown, you know, a mile away from them. Whereas if you go to, you know, another a chain or something, and you're going to have a different quality of food, should that be addressed on a national level?
It definitely should be addressed. We are aware of that. It's mm-hmm. it's a major problem because the prepared food industry, the prepared items that are boxed and ready to eat, don't necessarily give you the best nutrition. Definitely don't give you the best value for the dollar. Mm-hmm. And not being able to get fresh vegetables, and even frozen vegetables are okay nutritionally wise. They're just not as sexy as the fresh vegetables and the varieties. But we who eat fresh vegetables twice, three times a day, five times a day with every meal, we would get fresh fish and meats and poultry. We don't realize that there are so many people. Even though they may have the dollars, they don't have the ability or the time since they work all day and then they have to go to the supermarket in their very close neighborhood to buy the foods. They're buying prepared foods that are not prepared well, that are frozen, you know, advanced from the TV dinner, yes, but it's still frozen with processing involved. And that processing takes out a lot of the nutrients, the better nutrients that comprise the vegetables, the proteins that are in there. And also the junk foods that are considered and labeled and marketed as healthier, there's still a lot of junk food that's mm-hmm. out there.
And natural doesn't always mean healthy.
No, it doesn't. So reading labels, I think we all read labels a lot nowadays as to what's processed. And the problem is, even in the better grocery stores, the center is growing where all those prepared items are. It's the peripheral where you see if you go around the new regular grocery store, you have the produce, the meat, the dairy. That's what the breads. That's all around the side. In the center aisles, which makes up 80% of the groceries, all the boxed goods, all the frozen goods, all the junk foods and all of that. So it's really learning how to approach a grocery store and also getting better foods and fresh foods because the people, if they have to take a bus to go to a grocery store and a bus to come back to to their house, time, dollars, energy, it's hard and much less keeping it fresh. They may make that trip once a week or twice a week. So if they don't have the cart or, you know, something in that fashion.
We all have to educate ourselves about what we're eating.
Right.
You've always been an advocate for local fresh food, and I'd love to expand on that, but we'll have to save that for the next time we have you on because
right.
our time is short, unfortunately. Please, Alan, give us a history of the nonprofit Share Our Strength.
Share Our Strength, probably about 28 years overall in the market. Share Our Strength started in D.C. Billy Shore and Debbie Shore are the founders, and they sort of have developed a outreach program to chefs is where it started. We started doing this Taste of the Nation. Their idea was to get chefs involved in feeding people and to fight hunger. If we got chefs involved, their leadership role in the community and their knowledge of food and their ability to be spokesperson in the community. So gathering local communities, we actually started it about 26 years ago with the Taste of the Nation, which was a taste around event where chefs would bring in their food and put up a little pop-up restaurant, have you. But there would be 30, 40 pop-up restaurants in the same room with wineries, and people would come in and taste the foods. That was done actually in about 50 cities. When we first started it, we actually tried to do it all on the same day. In April.
Wow.
So it was an April date where for the first two or three years, we all did on the same date. That became a coordination nightmare. So then we sort of exchanged it into the month of April and then carried on through an annual time depending on the city. But right now we have about 40 cities that still participate. So if you think about it, if it's 40 cities, that's 160, that's 1,600 chefs that are participating in this fight against hunger. And what we focused on, not just generally hunger, because that's a big name and a big thing, we're focused on fighting childhood hunger. So mm-hmm. that's something that we can focus on. We can pinpoint where the points of contact are needed so we can solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. Taste of the Nation South Florida takes place next Thursday, the 25th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the main ballroom of the Lowe's Miami Beach Hotel, 1601 Collins Avenue on Miami Beach. For more info, tasteofthenation.org or nokidhungry.org. Those two websites have a ton of great access information, ticket information, and there are still tickets available. We're speaking with Chef Alan Susser. And we will continue our conversation in just a moment here on South Florida Arts Beat. So please don't go away. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on WLRN, 18 minutes past the hour. Our guest, Chef Alan Susser, and he is helping to produce and promote the Taste of the Nation South Florida. That is the brainchild of the wonderful organization that produces these events all over South Florida. And the tasteofthenation.org is the information website. Nokidhungry.org is the website as well. And we'll see Chef Alan Susser on WLRN-TV, Channel 17, tomorrow at 2 and 10:30. So we want to talk about Share Our Strength, the great organization that is producing next Thursday's event at the Lowe's. And this is essentially the one for Dade County. You tell me that there's used to be one for Broward, but you all have combined your talents.
What we felt is that in South Florida, we have such a big food scene that if we did one event and combine the energy and the effort – that we can make it double the size and triple the volume, triple the awareness. There's two things we're trying to accomplish with Taste of the Nation, with Share Our Strength. First off, we're trying to raise money and dollars to go directly to the kids. But the other thing is awareness. The more that people become aware that there is a problem, that there are food deserts in the marketplace, that there are people out there that are – have the ability to make decisions to feed kids properly in the schools, with people who have the ability to make changes and to get participatory in whether it's Taste the Nation or a local food bank or any of the various ways of helping kids and feeding kids. This is one component, but it's raising the awareness that there's more to it and that we need more help. And that's why it's Share Our Strength. It's sharing the strength of the community. That's really where the name came from, so that expanding on that, there's a lot of strength in the community, and we're all doing it to help kids, to feed them.
Tasteofthenation.org is the premier website to go to find out about how you can take part, how you can affect hunger in our country, and help to conquer it. Tasteofthenation.org. So next Thursday at 7 o'clock, you're going to open up at the beautiful Lowe's Hotel. And what are we to expect?
It's a great venue. I'll tell you what. This is one of the best venues out there, and being on Miami Beach for the Taste of the Nation, the Lowe's is wonderful, great hospitality, easy to get to, easy to get in. It's actually going to be over 1,000 people, 50 chefs. Now, each of them is a little pop-up restaurant. Each of them is creating their type of cuisine. At each table, they each have their own staff, and the best thing is not only to get to taste the food of the chef, but to meet them face-to-face.
That's always fun.
And that's really been one of the purposes of the Taste the Nation, of this tasting event, because we want you to meet the chef. We want you to talk to them. We want you to thank them for the food you've eaten or thank them for get to know them as well. The chef wants to meet you. The chef wants to meet who they're cooking for, and they also want to thank you for being there and being a part of this energy to feed kids. So 50 chefs, about 30 wineries, live auction, silent auction, a couple different ways of raising money, a VIP reception. So actually, you said we open at 7 o'clock, but we actually have a 6 o'clock VIP reception.
Ah.
So for VIPs, they get an hour earlier to meet with the chefs, meet and greet, because it's a little quieter. We also have a special VIP area, which we're probably going to have a couple of pop-up restaurants that are to be announced, kind of surprise there. And we also have an after party, a chef's after party, which you can buy tickets for. This is where the chefs let down their hair. We're going to have some fun on the beach at Splash in the back of the Lowe's. And you can buy a ticket to the chef's after party, actually. So kind of secret, and wow. I'm letting you in on it.
Just you and me.
Yeah, yeah. No one else is listening. But that all these components are going to raise money. The live auction, actually about 10 different live auction items. The stellar component of the live auction actually is going to be a trip to Jade Mountain in St. Lucia. Mm. Beautiful resort. Five-day wow. stay with airfare. It's like a $13,000 package. It's the most beautiful resort in the Caribbean. It's won top in the Caribbean for like 5 years straight. And so they've donated a five-night stay, and we'll auction that off. We'll auction off a wine cellar filled with great wines. Mm. We'll auction off some chef experiences as well. So it's a tasting event. It's a social event. It's one of a social cause. There's a lot of people that are going to be there. A lot of your friends are going to be there. A lot of my friends, my chef friends, are going to be there.
Name a few?
Sure.
I know you can't name all of the 50.
Yeah, but there's definitely going to be a lot of chefs. From Sugarcane, Timon is going to be there. 3030 Ocean, Dean Max, my friend actually up in Broward County, because this is actually chefs from Broward and Dade County. Joe Stonecrab, Andre is going to be there. From Little Palm Island, Rolando is going to be cooking up some great stuff. From South Beach Meat Market, Sean is bringing his staff, and they always do some great things there. From the Forge, Dewey's going to be there. Some of the restaurants, Quattro and Shake Shack, the Dutch from the W Hotel, the Federal Food, Turo Turo, Wynwood Kitchen, Cindy Hudson from Ortonique, from Kong River House, some very hot restaurants. Chef B is going to be with us. So I'll tell you what.
Long list.
Yeah, but if you're going to eat out next Thursday night, the only place to eat out, because this is where the chefs are. If you're eating in their restaurants, you're missing the chef. So this is 50 of the top chefs, and it's not easy to pick out 50 of the top chefs in South Florida, but this is the place to eat, because you're not only going to eat their food, you're going to meet each of them, and you're going to meet 50 different chefs. Now, this is it's really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Plus mixology included, so.
Plus mixology. So we're going to have a couple of guys mixing up some great drinks, great wines, and also, one of the great social components of this is that 100% of the ticket price, 100% of the ticket price gets donated to No Kid Hungry.
100%. That's magnificent. I don't know how it can be done on that basis. Bravo.
Right. Well, that's really why the chefs participate.
Because and you all are donating your
right.
services.
We donate our time, our energy, our creative, our food. We're all donating. We don't get any reimbursement for that. We bring in a team. We bring in the food. We create a dish. We do all of that. Again, we're donating it for the purpose of No Kid Hungry, of fighting this cause of no kid going to sleep hungry. We don't want that anymore. We don't want that happening. We want kids that really are healthy, that are wise, and are growing for our future. That's why we do this, for Share Our Strength.
Somebody's calling you for ticket information.
I know,
as
right now.
We speak.
Tickets are hot, I'll tell you that. They're going quick.
Once again, for more info, all of your questions are answered at tasteofthenation.org or nokidhungry.org. You can also find some info at dailymeltgrill.com. And our guest is still receiving phone calls. Chef Alan Susser with us today in our final few moments. What are the aspirations for Share Our Strength? Obviously, to conquer hunger in America, but anything beyond that?
Well, we really focus on childhood hunger, but also I'll tell you what, one of the things that we've really done that has been neat is disaster relief. Mm. So we've had recent disasters like the hurricane in New Orleans. We went in to help the schools.
Hurricane Sandy, were you all up the East Coast for
we
that?
We definitely were. So that we go in and feed families, feed people at need at the moment in the disaster. But also, for instance, in Hurricane in New Orleans, after that one, we actually went in and cleaned up some of the schools so the kids can go back to school. Mm. So as a team, Share Our Strength brought in chefs and other people to kind of witness what's going on, to see the disaster, that we know it's here and that it can happen, and it can happen anywhere at any time, and to help those communities, to help them grow, not just to feed them, but to teach them how to feed themselves, how to teach them to have better nutrition. One of the programs that we do is teaching kids how to cook and how to utilize the food economy so that if they're able to go to a grocery store, buy better food with their family, be able to know how to cook raw ingredients and come out with a great dinner. It's not only getting the family together. It's giving the kids the knowledge that a family that eats together, that eats better food and cooks together, is going to be a healthier family unit, and also a happier unit that's going to be healthier and focused a lot more on the future generation.
Chef Alan Susser, obviously, I hope that all of our listeners participate, buy some tickets, and go to this magnificent benefit. But can our listeners help you all out in other ways, such as volunteerism?
We actually, luckily enough, we've got wonderful volunteers, mm-hmm. and we've got great volunteers who have come forward. And so as towards the actual event, we're good. But anyone, send people to the site. Mm-hmm. Social media-wise, mm-hmm. send messages out there. Let people know. It's the awareness. Basically, write to a congressman, write to a friend, tell somebody you care about feeding kids. We want to make a difference. Here in Florida, actually one of the big programs that we've done is we have a in-school program where we feed every kid breakfast. Mm. And whether they need or not, so that they're in school eating breakfast.
So that they can learn.
Exactly. So yeah. We're preparing them for a great future.
Our guest today, Chef Alan Susser, Taste of the Nation South Florida, the big event next Thursday, the 25th, from 7 to 10, actually from 6:30 to 10.
Right.
So if you want to get in early, there's access. Main Ballroom of the Lowe's, Miami Beach Hotel, 1601 Collins Avenue. Once again, for more info, tasteofthenation.org. NoKidHungry.org. It should be a chant nationally. And DailyMeltGrill.com. I wish we had the rest of the show for you, Chef, but thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for such an incredible thing that you and Share Our Strength is doing, and I hope you accomplish your goal as soon as possible.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food. Our Palm Beach County Arts Calendar features Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Now, with his toes in the sand and an iced tea in his hand, our classical arts contributor Charles Greenfield recommends some intriguing music for your summer listening.
With summer doldrums, many of us find time to go back to basics, like actually reading books and listening to CDs or iTunes. In the last decade, technology and classical music have fused at warp speed, moving from the old Sony Walkman with a cassette or CD to iTunes syncing to your iPod, iPad, iPhone, or Samsung Galaxy. And while we fight those winter calories on the treadmill or elliptical, what better way to pass the time than reading or listening to Anna Karenina on your Kindle or iPad, or listening to a Mozart symphony on your iPod? In addition, with social media like Twitter or Facebook, you can debate, post comments on classical music, or even download your own ukulele version of Bach as a YouTube entry. Picking CDs is often bewildering. There is great talent out there, and lots to choose from. Here are my views on several recent CDs, from young international pianists to a string quartet that searches for modern and contemporary composers. It's rare to find a young pianist who switches from one genre to another with ease. In the case of 25-year-old Eldar Jangarov, he was a jazz prodigy from Siberia who played Duke Ellington's Sea Jam Blues before he was 9 years old. He also learned classical music, and his latest recording is his first solo classical debut. Recorded at the Manhattan Center Studios, he also self-produced his jazz release Breakthrough on the small multi-Grammy-nominated label Motema Music. In his classical release of Bach, Brahms, and Prokofiev, critics have described his playing as an uncompromising clarity of rhythm, timing, and sound that is pure light. In the Bach Partita No. 2 in C minor, the faster-moving rondo and capriccio are beautifully articulated with precision and sparkle, in contrast with the graver images presented by the dreamy sarabande. Or listen to his take on the always spirited Romance of Brahms, 8 piano pieces. The skipping levity of the capriccio in B minor and the very slow funereal intermezzo in A minor. His version of Prokofiev's often played Sonata No. 7 in B flat major lacks a little fire and rawness, qualities easily exposed recklessly by lesser talents, but watch his overall tight command. When I listen to his pyrotechnics and the flight of the bumblebee on the last track, I can only imagine how he would transform this into a jazz riff. Valentina Lisitsa, originally from the Ukraine but an American for 2 decades, may be one of YouTube's most popular pianists. Her Rachmaninoff receives more hits than practically any other classical pianist worldwide. Her recent March appearance at the Boca Festival of the Arts, playing Rachmaninoff's variations on the theme of Paganini, was a smash success. On her first major recording for Decca Classics, she has scaled an imposing mountain, namely the 4 Rachmaninoff piano concertos. Valentina said about this endeavor, "Arguably the most ambitious piano orchestra project that one can undertake in a lifetime. The sheer variety of emotions and styles touched upon is encyclopedic." And what makes Valentina so compelling, besides her wonderful technique, is her ability to conceive of these various emotions in the Rachmaninoff tetralogy and make them exciting and believable. England seldom produces pianists that appeal on an international level. The exception in the last few years has been the enormously talented young British pianist Benjamin Grosvenor, who has played in South Florida for Julian Krieger's Friends of Chamber Music of Miami. Like Valentina Lisitsa, Benjamin Grosvenor is a Decca Classics artist. His 2011 recording compiles Chopin, Liszt, and Ravel. The Ravel Gaspard de la Nuit is blindingly fast and beautifully constructed. The great pianist Arturo Benedetti Michelangeli once said, "No piano could possibly be good enough for this work." Grosvenor's rendition of the last movement, Scarbo, blows the notes off the piano. In his Decca CD last year, entitled Benjamin Grosvenor, Rhapsody in Blue, the amazingly young 21-year-old comes out swinging his American baseball bat with Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, Saint-Saëns' Piano Concerto No. 2 in G minor, and Ravel's Piano Concerto in G major, accompanied by the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by South Florida's former maestro, James Judd. The recording has great appeal not only due to its selection of well-known classical pop piano orchestra hits, but to Grosvenor's infectious style of playing, muscular, sensitive, and fast. While you may go automatically to the 14-minute, 50-second Gershwin standard, full of verve and raucous panache, don't skip the Saint-Saëns' first movement cadenza that starts the recording. String quartets are almost by nature committed to the Western classical composer pantheon, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, and Bartok. So it's instructive and sometimes revelatory when a fine string quartet ensemble conceives of other composers and other musical worlds. The 20-year-old Del Sol String Quartet from San Francisco on the Sono Luminous label has come out with the recording entitled Zia, a reference to the New Mexican Indian tribe and their reverence for the sun. The San Francisco-based ensemble includes violinists Kate Stenberg and Rick Shinozaki, violist Charlton Lee, and cellist Catherine Bates Williams. They are also known for their avant-garde multimedia dance, video, and opera productions. The five composers on the recording are Gabriella Lena Frank, who recently wrote a composition for the Dranoff two-piano competition, renowned American composer Lou Harrison, Spanish-born Jose Evangelista, Iranian-born Reza Vali, and Australian Elena Katz-Chernin. Here's an example of Reza Vali's acknowledgement of Iran's modal tradition with the Taska, and specifically the Nava mode. So despite the humidity and shifting weather outlook, music is readily available for summer interludes. While I prefer the physical CD or DVD rather than the over-compressed MP3 file, there is a strong argument for the ease of iTunes, your special iPad archives, and the internet to bring instant access to every conceivable musical trend or classical recording, historic or contemporary. It just takes a little research and you can find a few jewels or unforeseen masterpieces on your own. And what's more, whoever said you couldn't listen to your CDs, downloads, or files on a deserted island? For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot, do, de, do, ya, do, do.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food, cut up. A gathering of conchs surrounded me. No, I was not skin diving in the Bahamas. I was having dinner in Key West at a beautiful home, and I was happily encircled by some of the smartest, funniest people I have come to call friends. As many of our South Florida listeners know, folks who are born in Key West are known as conchs. My son Justin is one, in fact, and now, too, is my granddaughter, Audrey. The subject turned to childhood food loves, as it so often does after the first or second glass of wine. We were lit both by candles and a setting sun, but the longest-lasting light was memory. And guided by these, we shared stories of what my table mates remembered about growing up and eating in the homes of this island paradise town. I have cooked in South Florida my entire adult life, so discovering even an obscure new term for a dish gets less likely with each passing year. When I come across one, it's like finding a rare stamp for some, or a coin or baseball card for other collectors. I'm giddy when it happens to what I collect, and it happened at that table. A lovely, lifelong resident of Key West named Sheila passingly referred to a dish called cut up. I had to stop her, and patiently she described the dish so named. I think she was shocked I had not heard of it. Then she was happy. What could be better than sharing something we love in food with another? Sheila told me of the potluck process of cut-up. Conch families would come to the home of whoever was hosting a party and bring their contribution for cut-up. It's a kind of free-form salad made in a large communal bowl. The contributors abide by some basic ground rules. It is chiefly made from raw, cut-up, hence the name, vegetables such as ripe tomatoes, avocados, bell peppers, cucumbers, dressed in a bit of vinegar or, even better, old sour. Some families with delicious fruits like guava, mango, or avocado, and certainly picked from their own backyards, were allowed to take the cut-up in that direction. It's like songcraft when one bold person creates a stanza and then another equally brave one wants to add another and, if the crowd approves, they acknowledge it improves the dish. I have not had cut up yet, but I imagine it to be like gazpacho. The start of Sheila's remembrance began with kingfish. Her father was a lifelong Keys fisherman, and her all-time favorite dinner was kingfish and grits. I can imagine some listeners wincing. Kingfish is a divider. There are some foods that simply are. I have a hard time understanding this as a chef. I tend to like almost everything, as long as it's prepared really well. Sweetbreads, oysters, anchovies, they're all fine by me. But kingfish is often either smoked or just thrown back in the sea. And grits? Oh, another divider, especially when called by that name. Call it polenta, and not nearly so. But when you grow up with something provided for by your family, your allegiance can be devout. Sheila fell into that camp, and I can see why. When she described cut-up, I could also see how it made sense going with kingfish and grits. Kingfish is a bit oily, grits are creamy and nurturing, with the raw and textured cut-up adding nice harmonic and acidic elements, our party agreed the meal only needed one more touch. Another glass of wine. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West Kitchen and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in this coming Saturday morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Arepa. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we welcome back Mr. Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Bill, it's been too long.
Yeah, I tell you, Ed, but it's been great. And, of course, we live in paradise, but, you know, I remember this time when my mother used to make said, honey, you need to come in from the cold. And I tell you, the way things are happening, it's all like, honey, you need to come in from the rain, because it has been a lot of rain.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not complaining. Okay, so don't worry about that. But I do want to talk about things that we can do during the time when the sun is kind of behind the clouds a little bit. And let me begin with actually our newest attraction in Palm Beach County, and that's the expanded and renamed South Florida Science Center and Museum.
Hmm.
And, of course, what used to be called the South Florida Science Museum at Dreher Park had about a $5 million makeover, and it actually opened to thousands of people who came out in the rain, to tell you the truth at the time, to see what was happening, especially what was happening under the water, because it has one of the largest aquariums in the state of Florida. In fact, it's actually 14 different aquariums, and they're depicting different ecosystems all off the Atlantic Ocean. So you can view and be amazed at the beautiful coral and the fish and actually step inside something different, an aquarium, as if you are under the ocean and looking at these animals and coral yourself. So it's really exciting. The Science Center has expanded to accommodate some larger traveling exhibits and really gives a unique look into the world of science. It's totally interactive and therefore kind of a fun way to learn about the world that we live in. In fact, there's a huge globe of the world that explains weather patterns and the evolution of the Earth, again, in an interactive setting. It's really a fun way to experience science and the Earth, and of course, it's in the cool air conditioning, so you can enjoy that as well. The Science Center has a planetarium that has musical presentations almost every hour. And the other cool thing about the Science Center is that it's right next door to the Palm Beach Zoo. So you and your family and friends can actually spend the day and visit both attractions, and they have this one low price that you can do that. Another great outing, I think, in the cool is the Norton Museum of Art in West Palm Beach. And right now, there's an amazing exhibit called Block by Block, Inventing Amazing Architecture. And this is an exhibition of 10 landmark skyscrapers from all over the world, and they're all masterfully constructed by the Lego toy building brick aficionado, Dan Parker. He's Lego's certified professional. He's crafted these things. They're from 4 to 9 feet tall. They're architectural wonders from around the world. And the exhibit also features kind of a play area where visitors can actually create their own architectural wonders. So it's a wonderful place to go, and of course there are other exhibits that deal with a variety of artistic subjects. And the Norden is always, to me, a good place to go on Thursday nights for what they call Art After Dark. So during the evening, you can not only view the art, but there's live music, there's special drinks, there's guided tours, there's movies, just a lot of things to do. And I think, you know, for a lot of single or even married people, it's a great date night to kind of go there first and then head off to a late dinner. The other place I'd recommend is the Boca Raton Museum of Art, and it's a wonderful place to learn about the world and to see great art. And there's an exhibit right now called Heightened Perspectives by Marilyn Bridges. She's an American artist who obtained her unique perspective by photographing through the open doors of single-engine planes. So as a plane is flying hundreds of feet in the air, usually banking, she's photographing the city, the landscape, and simultaneously capturing some identifiable details and really revealing the larger complexities, actually from a bird's eye view. So it's fascinating to see her photography. If you can kind of imagine, you're flying in a plane at probably about 500 to 1,000 feet, dangerously low, and often referred to as a stall speed, but here she is leaning out, actually taking a bird's eye view of the earth and the cities and the landscape. And as one art critic said, she's kind of like the Indiana Jane of landscape photography. But it really is really interesting, and it's got a lot of great pictures that you really enjoy. And the other thing to me with the Boca Raton Museum that's really outstanding and something you really don't expect is the West African tribal art and oceanic art. I was just blown away when I could see the quality of this art. And it's an African art collection which numbers more than 300 objects and is actually among the most important collections of African art in the state. Represents all the major art-producing regions of sub-Saharan Africa, including Mali, Cameroon, Nigeria, Zaire, Ivory Coast, Liberia. And they really had and been collecting for over 20 years. So it's a great place to go and, like I say, learn a lot about the world. And, of course, I always have to put a shout-out for the Cornell Museum of Art and American Culture. at the Delray Center for the Arts. It has a wonderful exhibition going on right now called Flying High, The Story of Kites. It showcases the history of kites from their origin to ancient China to their scientific uses, just the fun-loving use of popular pastime like you and I probably did.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great kite collection, Japanese kites, one-of-a-kind dancing and fighter kites, and, of course, photography. And, again, remember, it's interactive. So even if you're not outside, you can act like you are at the Cornell Museum of Art and American Culture, The Story of Kites. And, of course, by the time the rain stops, you can venture out and actually go next door to the Puppetry Arts Center and watch some wonderful puppets perform there. Or you can just walk down the avenue in trendy Delray Beach. So you have it covered, Ed, both inside and out in the Palm Beaches, so come visit. But first, go to our website, palmbeachculture.com, to find out why we call it Florida's cultural capital.
That's Mr. Bill Nix, Vice President of the Palm Beach County Cultural Council, and thank you so much, Bill, for all those great suggestions.
All righty, Ed. Take care.
Tonight, Big Night in Little Haiti takes place at the Little Haiti Cultural Center, 212 Northeast 59th Terrace in Miami. They're featuring Tabu Kombo, Ambassadors of Compa, in the gallery, the work of photographer Luis Olazabal. The Family Art Corner is hosted by the Bass Museum of Art and Positive Impact Foundation. There'll be delicious Creole cuisine from Leela's. So much going on. Tonight, starting at 6 o'clock at Big Night in Little Haiti. For more info, bignightlittlehaiti.com. Once again, it takes place at the Little Haiti Cultural Center. Call 305-960-2969 for more info. And the Summer Concert Series in downtown Hollywood takes place every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. It's called Sax in the City, and it takes place in downtown Hollywood Live Music District. It's free, all-ages event. On July 24th, the jazz of Jeff Egan, the Latin jazz and R&B of Oriente, and the rockabilly of 18 Wheelers, among others. And coming up July 31st and July 24th, of course. For more info, go to HollywoodFlorida.com. That's GoHollywoodFLA.com. Sax in the City. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Norman Van Aken, and Bill Nix. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please always keep your dial set here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.